we will open then today the policy committee for the 8th of February. We do have two apologies. We have Councillor Neil and Councillor Lawton. Does somebody care to move or accept those? Councillor Deaker, seconded Councillor Kempton. All in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. We can confirm the agenda, I believe. Any conflicts of interest for this committee? No. No public forum today. The minutes of the meeting held on the 23rd of November have been circulated for adoption. Somebody care to move those?
Yes.
Okay, seconded. Councillor Noon. All in favour?
Aye.
It's carried. Any matters arising in those? No. Okay, on to our agenda today then. The first paper being the Wilding Conifer Amendment to the Pest Plan. So this is a minor amendment, but nonetheless is important. So I will get Mr. McRae here to outline to us the need for this plan change, which you may not have been aware of previously.
The current pest plan refers only to wilding contorta as a species for control under that document, and with the changes to wilding view around the community, the changes to wilding conifers have been broadened out and to a list of species which are there under 412.1 in this report, and so that the control of those particular species will be able to be undertaken with the program of work that's being scheduled for this coming year. So this is extending the control of those species on the identified properties, or on the properties that are identified on the maps, which has been agreed contract work through the wilding contorta, wilding pine species program of work that's been contracted out, needs to be able to be in the plan to undertake that contract work. And this is a small piece which, through the mechanisms under the Biosecurity Act, a change to the plan which has minor effects is able to be done without the public notification process, and this is just a piece of work to allow that contract work to be undertaken.
Okay, so I think there's probably more that we could say about that with regards to the need to do this plan change to access funding and who exactly has already agreed to this work. Ms. Bodega.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, just a bit more background. So the government in the budget put the wilding pine funding, eradication funding. They asked, or they required regional councils to administer that funding. For us to lawfully do that administration, we needed a pest plan that reflected the species with which we were applying that funding to. So it's administrative, but it is. We need to do it legally. So that is the reason why we have acted as we have. What happens in a subsequent pest plan is up to this council. But if we otherwise, we could not administer that money lawfully. So it was required to be done.
Yeah, so it's important to note that it's restricted to those species, and it's also it's very restricted to the mapped areas that have been agreed on for control work. Yep. Okay, opening the paper then for discussion. Oh, sorry, Councillor Woodhead.
Madam Chair, just a question around the delineation, identification of those management areas and how that information's fed up and the communication with the landholders inside that area.
So how would the consultation process go with those land?
Well, are they aware, for example, that they're in that management area? I'd imagine that these areas have come out of a combination of national prioritisation and work by the two groups in central Wakatipu. But I just so there's understanding the landowners' awareness of this, mm-hmm. and where has the information come from to draw the lines where they are.
Madam Chair, I mean, both those questions, very good questions. The mapped areas were done with a combination of the local groups who were involved in that activity. So the Central Otago Wild and Conifer Group and the Queenstown Lakes equivalent. We were involved. MPI were involved, but it is a community-driven activity. And those two organisations, they've got people on the ground, they are responsible to do that engagement with landowners. So, which is good, because it's we're not duplicating and we're not having to upskill ourselves in an area where we've got community groups doing it. So the individuals in those community groups that are running those programs will be funded out of that fund.
The answer to that question is then that those community members have been consulted with already and agree to the program, or they will be caught within this and now consulted after a plan change?
No, yep. The actual administration of the funding is a result of a relationship between those wild and conifer eradication groups and the landowner.
Okay.
Landowners may result. So there is no compulsion for that, this plan change to require them to have that work done on their properties. It just facilitates the ability to do so.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I mean, the key paragraph for me is the third paragraph where it says landowners not proposed within the management units for which they could agree to eradicate wild conifers on their properties. Participation in the wild and conifer eradication project is voluntary. Accordingly, the proposed amendment to the best management plan will not have a significant effect on their rights and obligations. So, look, hey, from my perspective, I'm thrilled, because we've been talking about, you know, wild and conifers for a long time, and this is here and now. We're doing something. We've got the money, significant amount of money, that we're facilitating through the government, and we're going to get some outcomes on the ground. Like, that's just great. To me, it's a template for moving forward with some momentum. And I say, well done, let's get on with it. My only question is, just from an ignorance perspective, is that if I go up to one of these plots of land, are they going to, after they're finished, is there going to be anything there that looks like a pine tree?
It's an acclaimed one.
Little this big long list from Douglas fir down to Radiata Pine.
Anything but not on the list you more, could have, I suppose.
Probably more horizontal than vertical.
Depends what you're. Yeah, I mean, if it's on the list, you should.
Yeah, no, I accept that.
Looks like a pine tree.
But is there anything that's not on the list is there going to be a tree that I'm going to say a pine, an introduced tree? Is this an all? What's not on this list?
This is wild and conifers, not exotic trees.
Yeah.
So it's those species that I understand that have been identified through research and anecdotally as spreading significantly enough to be, it was spreading uncontrolled.
Okay, is that the key thing?
Councillor Deaker, and then, yeah.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. When I look at those management units, the blue lines, I note that one of them almost seems to carefully wrap right around the part of the hill back of Queenstown, which is absolutely smothered in wildings, mostly Douglas fir, most of them spectacularly large, and through which the gondola lift operates up to the skyline facilities, which seem to be growing every week. Now, I don't know who owns that land. I suspect it's probably Crown land. If it isn't owned by the corporate that operates the gondola and all the facilities at the top of the gondola, well, somebody can come in and whack out mill for high profit, I imagine. Those superb trees, which in my lifetime didn't, you know, when I was young, didn't exist. They're clearly wildlings. They weren't planted by anybody. Is there a risk here actually trampling on somebody's rights, if it is indeed Crown land on which the facility exists?
Anybody care to answer that one?
I mean, if I would imagine, and I don't know for sure, but I mean, if you look at the top of that hill, you'll see wilding pine eradication has occurred, so that the seed doesn't blow over the top. So somebody, a community, has decided that it's acceptable to have those wildings in that area, and it may not be acceptable elsewhere. So I mean, that line is there because that work has been done, and the local group has decided that below that line is not going to be done. So we haven't been involved in that decision making to that level. But could that stuff be milled? Was another question. I'm not sure, because I'm not sure who owns the land.
No, I don't know.
Okay. So we have a recommendation that the changes to the piece have been identified in Appendix 1 be approved. Any further discussion around that?
Yep.
Councillor Noone and Councillor Woodhead.
The question around, and I think Mr. Clayton sort of covered it, I just wanted to sort of clarify, if we're talking about radiated pines just for a moment, and in areas where there are satellite yards or whatever in remote country, and a row of pines have been planted for shelter purposes, are they potentially exposed to this policy? Because they're not invasive in theory, because they weren't planted, they haven't been naturally they've been essentially created, man-made created, but they happen to be the species which are invasive. So how, in these management areas, do those sorts of situations, those sorts of plantations or shelter belts, for a better word, are called out or not?
There's the definition for wilding, isn't there?
Yes.
Which is not deliberately planted.
Okay.
And then there's a density that goes with it as well. So it stems per hectare or something.
That's correct, through the chair. And again, the landowner has to put the hand up and say, I want this to be undertaken on my property. And quite a number of them have identified their shelter belts as legal to go, because they do crowd it downwind seed source or upwind seed source.
Thank you.
Councillor Woodhead.
And I'll just add on to that, and that includes in some cases plantations and large ones.
Yes, there are seed sources.
I'm happy to move the recommendation, Madam Chair, and acknowledge the nimbleness on our feet in this case to work in with our fellow stakeholders, in particular the Crown.
Thank you. We do have a seconder there, and Councillor Noone as well. Any further discussion? No. We'll put that recommendation then. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Okay. Okay, the next paper then is compliance of the regional plan Water for Otago with the national policy statement for freshwater management. So we have undertaken a review of our compliance with that NPS, and the outcomes are here. Mr. McRae, did you want to touch on any of that? Or?
Just briefly introduce it. This sort of report was put up originally in 2011 when the National Policy Statement on Freshwater Management first saw the light of day, and at that stage we were essentially compliant with it, other than a piece that was compulsory required to put into the water plan in relation to water quality, and we've done plan changes since which have aligned with that. There is still minor non-alliance, shall we say, with the National Policy Statement, in the sense that we have not got what are called freshwater management units defined in the plan, but we have got areas of freshwater that are managed individually and have been included in there. So we haven't used that term specifically, but there is a plan change in the line of plan changes ahead of us to line up the minor pieces of full compliance with the National Policy Statement. The amendments that came through in 2014 for the National Policy Statement on Freshwater Management included the National Objectives Framework, which was around a series of contaminants that needed to be considered and appropriate concluded in here, and that work has been done by and large. And Dr. Dean Olsen is with us in the back for the science side of it, but essentially there was a series of contaminants that we needed, that they were seen as compulsory, and compulsory in the sense of this action meant we had to look at that contaminant, for lack of a better term, determine whether it was appropriate or significant for us, and if it was, then include it into our document. It didn't mean we had to include all of those contaminants into our document as such. So that work has been done, because some of it was things like temperature, oxygen and things like that, which when the water in Otago's river is cold, so it wasn't seen as a necessary requirement to continue to measure those sort of things. So we believe is sufficient to be compliant with it, with the National Policy Statement on Fresh Water Management, other than tidying up essentially grammatic and wording and things like that, definitional pieces. But the intent of it is we're there. Yeah.
Councillor Scott?
Yeah, no, thank you. Actually, just in reply to what Mr McRae was saying, that, you know, the river's cold and the temperature doesn't necessarily have to be recorded. I had somebody telling me the other day, in a very informed way, that one of the most important parameters that needed to be measured over time to measure climate change was actually the temperature of the water in the lakes. So, yeah, I think the key thing here is that I think in terms of the water plan, that to a certain degree, the IOC has been proactive, and taken a hat off to the IOC and a lot of the work that's happened, so this is a bit of an alignment, with the national perspective, and there's a methodology to it, and well done, good, let's do it.
Yep. Essentially, the content of the plan, we have default levels been put in at the beginning, and specific catchment levels have been brought in through various plan changes, part at the beginning of the plan when operative, but also through later plan changes. So all areas have quantity, quality type limits and controls around them, and then the 1C plan change effectively put quality controls across the all catchments as well. And there's a bit to bring those together so that they're uniform. But all parts of Otago have controls and limits based on them.
Thank you.
I think Councillor Laws was next. Did you want to speak, Phil?
Oh, no, I was just going to ask a question. Is that all right?
Yes, sure.
Thanks. Mr McRae, the monitoring of the lake health, have there been any different results established from the different criteria of measurement that's been applied from that the Otago Regional Council to that fulfilling the freshwater management?
Can I refer that question to Dr. Olsen, please? He's a scientist.
You got that question okay?
Sorry,
no. Oh, yep. Or maybe restate it.
In terms of aligning the National Policy Statement with the way in which the Otago Regional Council previously conducted its monitoring of lake health, have there been any results that have varied as a consequence of the different measurement standards?
Yeah, so historically, measurements in those lakes have been made at the lake outlets, as opposed to in the body of the lake. So, stated environment monitoring has been done good through at the outlet in the Hawea River and also in the Kawara at the outlet. We've moved on from that now. So, we've currently got the TLI monitoring, the trophic lake monitoring, that's underway. It's going to be underway for the next couple of years. And the state of the environment review really is that's where we're going to set up the long-term future for how we're going to monitor the lakes. So we've got a bit of breathing space for the next few years when we're doing this intensive monitoring as part of the TLI work. But looking forward, the state of the environment review will really set that. I think it's likely that it will be lake body sampling as opposed to lake outlet sampling, just to remove that issue around, is sampling in an outlet, lake outlet, representative of what's going on in the body of the lake. I think it's also fair to say that this is a national policy statement, but there's been actually very little guidance, specific guidance from the central government around how they expect this to be implemented. The implementation guide, for example, doesn't actually specify where you measure the lake or how you measure it. So there's actually a lot of discretion on the part of regional councils how we actually put this beast into practice. But you know, looking forward, the intent of that state environment review is to make sure that we're collecting really robust quality data about the state of those lakes. So I think, you know, once we've got that in place, and in the meantime we've got the TLI work going on, we have that now, and we will do well.
In your view, does the policy statement improve the quality of assessment of the lakes in the Otago region?
The NPS doesn't, in my view. The reason being that the National Objectives Framework, the levels that are set out in there, you know, our big lakes automatically fall into A band, and you know, they could degrade tremendously and still be in A band. So in that regard, it doesn't really give us much guidance. In terms of the parameters that are to be monitored, set out in the National Objectives Framework, it doesn't really add anything that we don't already monitor. But certainly, you know, it's signalling the intent of you know, central government, and we've currently got a program in place with the TLI monitoring that complies with NOC. And looking forward to the SOE review to make sure that we're doing it in the best way possible.
Which was the last question I was going to ask. Who audits that you're doing things in the appropriate fashion in terms of implementing this national statement?
I might defer the audit side of things to Mr. McRae, but as far as I'm aware, nobody audits it formally. But with the State of the Environment Review, I mean, in some ways that is an audit, you know, and we're looking at getting external advice in as to how best, you know, we undertake that monitoring. It's, you know, there's always going to be differences of opinion, you know, professionally as to the most effective way of doing it, but I think if we, you know, certainly get things peer-reviewed on a regular basis, reviewed and those reviews have external scrutiny, then that should give you confidence that it's being done in
an
appropriate manner.
Here we go.
Craig,
might want to expand on that.
Essentially, it's peer review. Both around the regional councils get together, the science managers on this get together and talk about consistency between themselves, but also then between Ministry for the Environment and that same group again, talking about consistency of approaches, results that are coming in, trends, change and that sort of stuff. So there's an interactive relationship going, because in and of itself it's not, it's wrestling between being science for knowledge and information for management, and it falls a little bit in the middle there, in the middle ground between those two. And so because the Ministry for the Environment is interested in the management consequences of decisions that are made, whereas the science, they're studying for knowledge in and of itself. And so this sort of work environmentally sits sort of in a greyish area in between the two, trying to be significantly science robust so that the answers that you derive can be confirmed, but in a context with which they can help make and drive management decisions going forward.
Okay. Any further questions then? No, it's just that the report is received and that our compliance with the objective of the NPS freshwater is noted as recommendations. I'd just note though that in that table we have got a plan change to align terminology to freshwater management units, and that seems to be 2017-18, which is coming year.
Yep.
So, yeah, that will happen. Very good. Okay. Anybody care to move those recommendations? Councillor Scott, seconder. Councillor Hope, all in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Next paper then will be Plan Change 1D, Flow Requirements for Water Tank. So we have a paper here outlining Yeah, what's intended with Plant 1D? Perhaps Mr. McRae, did you want to introduce this one?
Yeah, certainly. Plan Change 1D is was presented as a series of other plan changes in relation to minimum flow work for the water plan, getting ready for 2021. And plan change, this plan change in particular, was about the residual flow component of resource consenting. So a little bit of background. The minimum flow plan changes, which define flows and rivers at particular sites, and then allocation volumes of water based around that minimum flow, mainly work on the main stems of the more significant rivers. And so takes from rivers and tributaries, which are more distant, are often alone up a tributary somewhere, not collected together, or some distance from a minimum flow site. And so the residual flows, which is a mechanism which is already in the water plan, assumes setting a limit on the amount of water that can be taken by leaving an amount in the river at the point of take. So it's exclusive to a particular consent, as opposed to a minimum flow site, which is general to a lot of consents upstream at that point. Inside the plan, the process or the purpose for the minimum flow is slightly different than the purpose for a minimum flow. So the residual flow and the minimum flow are essentially trying to achieve different purposes, which creates a bit of confusion. And then the mechanism within which or how the residual flow is set isn't actually set in the plan itself, and that has varied over the years and so has created a bit of confusion again between parties who are attempting or are in a position where they need to establish a residual flow about what methodology are we supposed to use to set how much water should be left in the river for the reasons of assuming that it will maintain its in-stream values but not necessarily contribute to the main stem. So again, this plan change is about just trying to tidy up those pieces of the plan to make them consistent, to make them clear, so that moving forward with the reconsenting of mining privileges, that those mining privileges that are not on main stems and are up tributaries will have as much information as we can give them as well, so that the essentially there will be a process for calculating the volume of water that needs to go past at that point of take in a tributary will be a schedule on the back of the plan, so that it's quite clear the process to go through.
And
take some questions, yeah.
Sure.
Yep.
Any questions then? Councillor Hart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've had a red hot phone call from many pretty unhappy farmers last night about this, and I'll just read you out quickly what they're saying. Quite a few very late. They're saying things like residual flow, the minimum flow, we don't understand why you needed to bring in this plan change 1D. The whole other level of complexity, it's in a nutshell, everything is already there in what we're doing. Emphasis would go back on the farmers and the water users. And again, I stress they're not happy. Again, another phone call. Don't understand why we've got this changed. Managing low flows should be managed in the water groups. Why do we need it? We have a minimum flows already. This has already been passed through. OIC mission is to look after business and people and their livelihoods. When you're doing this thing to RMA, why is the reason that you want to do this?
Any other questions or comments? Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I assume the answer to that, through the chair, Mr. McRae, is that, hey, it's important that at a consent point that the water that's going past in a tributary is of a particular sufficient volume. Yeah? So we've got our heads around that in terms of the main stem, but aided tributaries are important as well. So I think that's what the answer is. My question is and I appreciated your explanation too,
Mr. McKay, because it doesn't actually become straight out in your report, even the definition of the residual, as it says here, the report discusses the project addresses setting other flows referred to as residual flows. But I like your definition. But my question is, look, to change the water plan, you would know better than I, it's going to take a bit of work, and it's going to take some time. And this type of, you know, this type of process should be within a change in the water plan, which is a formal commitment, resource, time, possibly even a little bit of uncertainty, or should it be done external to that, just as part of our communication process? So, you know, we've got the formality of the water plan. This is quite a question. I'm not saying I'm right or wrong.
It's good to hear.
But I just, it's just like on one hand, we're standing full ahead with these meetings, you know, and we've got all these meetings, we're telling them what we're doing. But on the other hand, we're saying, well, actually, the water plan's changing as we're sort of going. So my question is that the optimum way to do it? Or from a legal perspective, do we not have any choice?
Yes. Legally, we can just sit on our hands, quite frankly, and administer the water plan as it is right now.
Yeah.
So, in that sense, no. But there was a water schedule of, at a workshop late 2016, water schedule of plan changes around catchments and minimum flows that we were working on.
Yes.
And this plan change was included in that schedule towards the end.
Okay.
And after a lot of discussion, and because a lot of the mining privileges that are coming up are actually on tributaries,
it was
essentially instructed to bring this plan change forward.
Yes.
And to do it sooner rather
yes.
than later,
yes.
so that there was greater clarity and certainty for those going forward and replacing their mining privileges.
So, like when we go to these meetings, and we'll say, well, look, this is how we're going to change it. And this is the reason why it's going to be quite clear. Are they going to get concerned in these? Because we'll have to go to consultation here.
Yes. On
one hand, we're sort of telling them what we're doing with the deemed permits. On the other hand, we're sort of asking them, is this sort of okay? I'm coming up with words that might be quite right, but I'm asking.
Yeah.
Just trying to improve my understanding.
Yeah. But that's essentially what we do with every plan change.
Yeah.
We go to the community, consult about what the issue is, how do we get a solution.
Yeah.
Then we go back after some work and analysis and some science input and things with options, costs and benefits of those, and we work it through. The essential message is that this is not a whole lot of new provisions going into the plan. It's about tidying up some unclear and inconsistent provisions that are already in the plan.
Okay, and is it going to impact on any of the other work? I'm talking in terms of like the minimum flows for our rivers and this type of thing. Does it impact in any way, like Manuherikia, the fact that we're doing this on the tributaries, is that going to impact on that process? Because I mean, if I was a farmer up the tributary, I might be thinking, well, you know, it's impacting on me here, and I thought I was okay, I wasn't really that affected in terms of the minimum flow down on the main stem. Is there a timing impact, just how it all folds together, or does it fold together nicely?
Well, they really need to come together
at
a point in time clear of 2021.
Yeah.
And doing it now, for those that are distanced from the main stems,
yeah.
This will give them the opportunity to work through how much water do they have to leave at the point of their take.
Yeah.
So it's as important to those people, and that's a lot of people who are off any of those main stems that have particular minimum flows.
Yeah.
They will have their ability to work out what needs to be left at their point of take sooner than rather than later. But as far as the Manuherikia, yes, some people will be off the main stem management regime under that plan change, and others will be off the tributary provisions which are part of this particular theme chain.
Yeah,
as will those in tributaries and all the other catchments as well.
Important to remember though that those on the tributaries are still affected by the minimum flow on the main stem.
Correct.
Yes.
So
yes.
They're linked then as well.
Quite often. At some points there are people who are just on the main stem and the minimum flow. There are people who are well up the tributaries in places and are just on that, and there are some that get a bit of both because of their relative position.
Yeah.
I doubt nearly everyone's hands up now, but Councillor Whitehead, Councillor Noon, Councillor Deaker, everyone I think over here.
Councillor
Whitehead. Thank you, Madam Chair. So thank you for the reminder, Mr McCrae, because when the notice came out about the drop-in sessions, I'd forgotten about our workshop. But I've been doing some thinking, and clearly there's been some phone calls as the meeting notice has gone out there and the awareness of this plan change from the community. Some of them were a bit surprised too. I looked up the water plan and policy 647, which is about putting in place residual flows, and trying to understand from there what the actual issue is. So it's a need to maintain a residual flow at a point of take will be considered with respect to any take of water in order to provide for the aquatic ecosystem and natural character of the source of water, which is pretty similar to the policy for minimum flows, actually almost identical. And so then I'm just starting to think through. I'm thinking about our workload, which is significant from a policy perspective. I'm thinking about that. The certainty that landowners need from a minimum flow process, ASAP. In other words, you know, and I think we locked down on the menu here, Care, the Arrow and the Cadrona, where a great bulk of those mining permits sit in those catchments. And then I struggled to actually have it clearly identified before we were explained from our communications what the actual issue is here. There's one around potentially the point to take and having a residual flow there or somewhere else, and the methodology for setting it. But I'm wondering whether it's more of an interpretation issue, and when I read the policies, it sort of slipped down my priority list as a result. And so I'm a bit concerned that it's going to bog us down into a plan change potentially that is going to take resources and time and not allow us to move as quickly as we can with the minimum flows. That's one question.
Can I just reply to that, in that for a lot of the people, yes, in the Manuhirikia, but for a lot of those takes in the Manuhirikia, they will be out of tributaries.
Yes.
So the minimum flow work in the Manuhirikia will not do anything for those people who are up well up the tributaries.
Yep.
So this is their minimum flow.
Yes. Yeah.
And as you've indicated, the lists, the purpose of the residual flow and the minimum flow are similar.
Yes.
But they are significantly different in that for a minimum flow you need to consider other takers, for the residual flow you don't.
Yes.
So if you're downstream of somebody, you can probably kiss your upstream supply of water goodbye because there's no reason for consideration of it. So there's some equity / fairness
involved
because the lists are not the same.
Right, so are there not some other policies around water use or that capture that effect
that staff need
to take into account?
No, not in the plan. That's part of that admission that we're trying to cover.
That was why we wanted people to work in groups so they could iron out amongst themselves how they share water rather than us doing that for them through the plan change.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So another question there, and it's around clearly articulating the issue here, because the process we're starting with these meetings, and I've struggle with how many you're going to get to turn up in Dunedin, Balclutha and Oamaru, but anyway. They're drop-in sessions and we're wanting feedback back the other way. I think we need to more clearly articulate the issue. And if in this case it's quite a specific issue, it's not a broad across a number of chapters on the water plan. It's quite specific, it's about one topic essentially. Yeah, the tentacles will reach out a little bit. We should be able to clearly articulate what the issue is, what we're thinking the solution is, and help expedite this process. Because if you ask them to come along and have a scone and how do you think it's going to go without giving them that sort of detail, you're going to get an earful on everything else but the water plan. And it's not efficient for this organisation. I'm concerned about giving landholders certainty as soon as possible so they can get on and work their way through this process before 2021. Mm-hmm. And this material gave me more questions than answers.
Okay, Councillor Noone.
A lot of what Stephen has said, or the Chairman should say, has said sort of touches on my thoughts, but I just want to come back to Councillor Hope. I had a similar phone call and it was very much focused on within the current water plan, all the work was done with regards to social and cultural values, etc. It all sits there, it's all there. And what I was being told was that we're going to redo, essentially, through this plan change, we're also going to focus on those values again to justify the consent holders, talk about the water, didn't water comes here, those consent holders' position to be able to secure a resource consent. That's one of the fears they've got, because they just see there's a huge amount of work. So that's the one query. The second query was around, have we got enough robust data ourselves to be able to defend our position with a plan change? Would we be able to sort of say, well, we're pushing these deemed permit holds towards a certain process, and are we in a position to be able to defend that at a higher level?
Yep. First question, this is about making sure that in setting a residual flow, those values and things that have been identified and are in the plan are actually recognised when we set the residual flow, or when a residual flow is set for a particular take.
So when you say through the chair, when you say are recognised, Mr. McCrae, does that mean that those wider stakeholders in agree or disagree with the position? So does that
First of all, that they're on the list of things that need to be considered. And then the second bit is that we're not attempting to set what the flow will be at the point of take with this plan change, because they are all over the place. And as we had an earlier discussion, some of those takes will no longer exist, but they will be part of a wider, bigger consent taking. So these are things which we're setting the mechanism in place to calculate what that flow should be when a particular point of take is applied for. So it's a piece of science-based work, essentially, that will be done to accompany an application for a consent from out of a tributary, for example. And it's just clarifying those parts of the plan that are already there and how they will work. And so there's probably been a bit of a miscommunication from the information that's gone out already, if we've really got them riled up that much.
Sorry, Councillor Noone, you just finish off.
Well, yep. I absolutely agree with Councillor Woodhead that we need to be able to articulate what the issue is,
yes,
what we're trying to achieve.
Yes.
It comes actually back to the point Mr. Crowe earlier and the second Councillor Woodhead.
Yes.
What are we trying to achieve with that particular amendment to the...
Absolutely.
Having a conversation with the Crown. So I think we need to understand at level so we can articulate and decide.
Councillor Deaker, and then Councillor Laws, and then Councillor Kempton, and Bell, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm complimentary to Councillors Woodhead and Noone, because Mr. McCrae hasn't yet had the opportunity to respond to Councillor Hope's queries, which I took to be, we don't need this. The water groups can make these decisions. This is the regional council intruding on the way we manage our private business. I'd like to know how Mr. McRae would respond to that, not just in this meeting, but in the Cromwell Town Hall or wherever.
Well, I suppose first of all, that water groups aren't compulsory. And for a lot of these tributary takes, they're not necessarily close to others either. So some of these takes are isolated takes up smaller tributaries. So the concept of working together was never really part of the group discussion, in the sense that we never put enough into the plan to say that everybody had to be in a group, or everybody would even be able to be in a group. We'd always accepted that there would be some individual takes that have to work alone, just because of where they are and sheer geography location of where they are. They'll be on their own, doing their own thing. So this is about helping those people that are up a gully on their own and making it very clear for them so that they can work out how much is there. Because if we don't get this clear now, when the heat comes on, we're going to be through the courts, if you like, probably worst case scenario with each take, as we argue about how much water should be left in this particular river and how should it be calculated, what should be considered when we decide how much water, how do we calculate it, and that will, each of those will be individual arguments at each and every application that comes through, potentially, worst case scenario. So it's about trying to get as much of that process clarified sooner rather than working out something through the courts.
Okay. Councillor Lord and then Councillor Hempton.
As councillors be aware, I mean, I'm just a new councillor along with three of my colleagues anyhow. And this has been quite an interesting issue to try and get our heads around. I haven't, yeah. But when I hear Stephen say, as chairman of the Otago Regional Council, we need a bit more clarity around this, then I sort of feel okay now. That's good. I don't have it. If the chairman doesn't have it, then why should I be expected to get it? I guess what I'm hearing, though, and certainly in Carmen's case, is that, and I don't want to teach our communication people to suck eggs, but do we need to be more proactive in the way in which we communicate with farmers and with irrigators and water takers? And by that I mean the meeting that I went to was very useful for me, and maybe it would be useful if some of our councillors, particularly our urban councillors, saw that as well. But there was still a feeling amongst the farmers, in particular, and the Auckland horticulturalists that attended the meeting that I attended at Lowburn, that they needed to get to be helped through the process, that they needed to know where to go to and somebody to sort of guide them through that process. And at the moment we're sort of saying, oh, lawyers should be involved and groups should be involved and things like that. But I just want to flag and ask the opinion of you, Gretchen, as chair. Do we need to do a bit more? Do we need to start walking some of our people where required through the process continually, rather than just, here's the story, you work it out, submit your application?
I don't know the answer exactly to that, Councillor Laws. I think there's definitely a confusion around the table about what this plan change is. So, and most people speaking are trying to clarify that confusion. So I think it reflects, as we're representatives of the community, confusion probably in the community around this paper. And we do need to be a lot clearer. And I think Councillor Woodhead's got a good suggestion there, that if we are going to consult, and we've heard some good reasons that there perhaps are some issues, let's identify those issues clearly and let's not do it as a drop-in type format. Let's do it a different way that we can communicate more clearly what those issues are and seek specific feedback on that rather than opening it all up and all the fears and all the things that don't necessarily have to be opened. Mm. We can't afford to open an entire section of the plan change at this point. My feelings are that a plan change that brings in values beyond what residual flows currently do will have a lot of submissions. Bringing in and recognising cultural and social as well as those more ecological is quite a big thing. Mechanism on how to set residual flows, technically we heard that one too. That's quite a, well, that's the thing that generally goes through Environment Court for years. What's the best methodology for setting a flow? You can debate that forever. So that one's not a small point either. Very much narrowing down, so people's fears around those ones and all the times and years they've spent in the past in Environment Court around those things aren't there hammering away and making them fearful of this plan change. So yeah, clarity. We definitely need clarity. How can we do that? We've got a paper here just to note this plan change. I don't know if that's the best recommendation. We'll hear some more discussion and decide amongst ourselves where we go from this, but there's certainly a feeling of needing to tighten up on what the communication is from here, I think. Councillor Deeker.
We get ourselves into a wee panic about 6A, quite often, regularly around this table. Is it going to work? Have we got time? Have we got the troops on the ground? Do people understand it? We also get ourselves into wee panics over 1C. Are we going to haul in all those deemed permits and convert them to consented takes? Now we've got 1D, any minute now there'll be the urban water quality stuff rolling out. Our region is water plan changed to the gunnels. And I just worry that people are going to drown in it all and not achieve what we want them to achieve. So the point of my saying all that stuff was to ask Fraser, is this really necessary now? Can't we just delay it, back off, and focus on what we know must happen, which is 6A and 1C?
Well, this is... I'd love to say, yeah, let's not do this, but in all honesty, this is an important piece of tidying up the plan, which Ms. Weaver talked about this morning, working with that group, giving them certainty so that they know what's there, so that we're not arguing about what does this mean in 2020 or 2019, so that we've actually got this out here. So this is as important to somebody up a tributary as the minimum flow in the Manuhirikia is to somebody on the main stem.
I kind of get that.
Yeah.
But it's a precursor to 1C success.
Yes.
But it's a hell of a distractor as well.
Well, it is for some, because if you're on the main stem, no. Because you're worried about the ones, you're worried about the minimum flow, and where we put the minimum flow. But if you're at the top of Drybread Creek or somewhere, then yeah, this is your minimum flow, and this is how it will be set. Yeah. So this is as important to those people as it is to get the minimum flow on the main stem for the main stem people. Yeah. I'm not. This isn't a job creation scheme by any means whatsoever.
I think perhaps we need to think strategically then that if it's very, very important, how long it takes, and then how long, once we've got surety on this plan change, for the next phase, which is then people know how they're supposed to apply for their residual flows and how long that might take, and whether it's... Mm. before 2020 or not, strategically as part of a wider program, we'd like to see some detail or think about that. Councillor Kempton?
Yeah, thank you. It seems to me, trying to stand back and look at it from a big picture perspective, that we've got an integrated water quality program that isn't as integrated as we thought it might be. And that's our problem. And it seems to me that we are turning the, or attempting to turn the residual flow provisions of the current water plan into a proxy minimum flow kind of environment. By that I mean that we end up considering all of the things that might be considered in a staged minimum flow consultation process, and then of course in turn the plan change that goes with that, so that we can say, well, we're treating you as close as we can to the same in a tributary, as close as we can to the guy on the main stem, except it seems to me that there's one little problem in that, and that is that that's the one of being able to satisfy the minimum flow conditions at the gauging site halfway down the Manahirakia, and being able to add up all of the residual components that will be needed to service that once you're getting well up into the catchment. Does that? I'm interested in how that comes together first of all, and then I just wanted to go off from there. Could you
when you get up the tributary, the residual flows for each of those takes is focused on the tributary,
yes,
in and of itself, not necessarily maintaining the minimum flow down at wherever the minimum flow site is,
mm-hmm,
because there's sufficient distance away to not have a connection that's of relevance. And so the main stems are more about taking the water through the main flow of the river through that main stem, and not necessarily reliant on tributary inputs as a major source of water. That's essentially the way it works.
Yeah, I mean, I don't quite understand that on the basis of the summation of all those things makes it a minimum
flow. Oh, absolutely, yes, yeah, yeah. So Chatter Creek's still important for the Manahirakia at the bottom end of the catchment, yes.
So the next question that I have then is, if we're talking about tributaries and the main impact with respect to residual flow, it is for the takers, the taker under consideration, if you like, and the takers downstream, that we already have to look at the aquatic and ecological values. Certainly the wider social values aren't included in that, but on an 80-20 basis, for want of a better term, do you think that they are, without this plan change, that they're going to pop up every time you're doing a residual flow, or in 5% of the cases, or even 50%? Because that, to my mind, is key to whether it is worth inserting 1D, is just how much risk are we taking around that? So that's the hub of the question.
Yeah. Well, most of them will have some interaction with somebody else in a tributary, despite what I've been saying, because there are a few that will be unique, but the majority will be there. But they are operating in a resource consent, mm-hmm, as opposed to a plan change. So that they've applied to us for water, to take water, and we need to make some considerations about, do we approve this take or not, and if so, how much and under what conditions. So this is setting it up, the regime, for that consent decision process, just as the minimum flow does for somebody on the main stem who chooses to apply. We go, yes, you can take an amount of water, it will be subject to the minimum flow. And this is the same, make sure that there is it's clear as to how that amount of water to be left in the tributary will be calculated, and what will that mean.
Councillor Bell,
I certainly, through you, Madam Chair, I've had quite a lot of people ring me, about 7 people in total, which they are all here, their comments on here. My first time was on last Monday the 30th, when I was hailed down in Main Street of Ranfurly, where a farming leader in the irrigation yelled out, "What the hell's these drop-in bloody centres? You've got to get rid of them for a bloody start." And he was yelling out, so I said, "Well, you better come across the street where we can get a table and have a yarn." And then another two farmers joined us, and we had a discussion. And I immediately could see there was a communication problem. And I probably maybe the one that may have suggested they go and see some of their professional advisors, and maybe they should get around the table with the ORC staff and have a good yarn about this. That was last Monday. And the reason that they wanted that drop-in session to be dropped, they farmers like to hear a summary from the ORC, and they also want to hear the other contributions from the other people that are, would be in those sessions. They see a more formal situation, and it's important to them. They saw it, the drop-in sessions, as a lazy way out for the ORC staff, their words, who don't want to be quizzed, and that's their words. One particular, and Councillor Hope heard this because my phone was on speakerphone, one of the conversations last night, just to give you a feel how they reacted to it. And I have to say I agree with the comments that Madam Chair and Chairman Stephen has just said. But I just want to give you a bit of a flavour. So one plan change is seen to be as a sneaky way of doing things and snuck in between a 1C plan change. It appears that the irrigation community, that the 1D has just appeared there, and there's confusion out there. This is the content that I'm getting out of these things. So, and another comment from one is, do you guys have some cunning strategy? Ask Mr. McRae for the answers. You know, so what I'm trying to do, we've got to do better than this. And we had all this sort of stuff. A lot of the other things and comments I have here may well be similar comments that some others may have from some other people. So I do have quite a few comments here with their regards and the way of thinking. But I think, Madam Chair, we have to have a better communication way of getting through this. Mm-hmm. I believe that we've just got to get on with it. They're very concerned about the timing. And another comment from, and I'll say it was a Kyburn group of farmers, said, why haven't the ORC, this was Monday last week, come and asked us for our records on regarding the tributaries on residual flows? So they said, we've got all the facts and figures. So we have not been approached. So I think we need to, all these people are important people, and we need to be getting around the table and talking and making sure that we're not losing time, as the Chairman has said and Madam Chair has said, and get on with the job. I won't touch on all the other stories that I have here, and I have pages of it. So,
the good thing to take out of it is there's a lot of people out there wanting to talk to us. It's just and a lot of strong opinions. And
very much so. And I've got a folder of them
as well. And it's the way in which they want to do it. And there's a lot of positivity. I've had a lot of feedback too, but some positivity too. They love getting together in a group session and hearing from diverse points of view so they can hear what everyone else is thinking, and it's open and transparent. So they like that type of forum. Councillor Brown, actually, did you want to? No, Councillor Woodhead.
Well, Madam Chair, you and I had a discussion with Suzanne Watt about the upcoming Dean Permit.
Two of the individuals.
Conference workshop in Central Otago. And the agenda around that, and I flicked an email back to her after these conversations started about plan change 1D. It might be going to muck up her agenda. But is there a chance to deal with this there? We've got the audience in the room, hopefully. So this is the 29th of March in Alexandra, where we've got a water forum being organised for deemed permit holders and stakeholders, and
that's the basic if you would like to respond.
Just make a comment on the reason for the drop-ins, and I just want to defend our use of those. We've had a lot of comments from farmers to say that in a large forum, many of them are afraid to speak. Now, this particular one may need a slightly different format, but that's the reason we do the drop-ins, and the feedback we've had is very positive about them. What I'm hearing is that maybe we need to actually have the reason for the drop-ins better explained. So from where I'm sitting, I'm getting that message, but you know, I'm mindful of the time and the rest of our agenda. You know, you've asked the question directly of the director. Do we need that? He said yes. I'd like to get a sense from this committee as to whether or not you want us to go ahead. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what I'm looking for out of this discussion, and then the methodology and the explanation should we go ahead is something that we'll need to work out pretty regularly. So,
yep.
Madam Chair, if I may ask that.
Yep, that's useful. Councillor Kempton.
Yeah, look, I just want to come back around to the question I asked before, which the answer you gave me was informative, but I don't think I actually quite got to the hub of it, Mr. McLean. And it comes down to me, by doing nothing, please explain, give us some idea of the level of risk we are taking with respect to wider interest groups wanting to get involved in consents around residual flows. Because to my mind, that's what it's about. It's a low level of risk, let's not bother. If this thing's going to hit us like a brick wall, well then, bloody hell, somewhere we've got to get it there.
We're worst case scenario is that each residual flow ends up in the Environment Court.
Which
each application ends up in the Environment Court.
Each application for a consent.
It requires a residual flow, ends up in the Environment Court. And we're discussing something like the process for setting the residual flow. Yeah.
Do you have a feel for it? Do you have a feel for the level of risk we're taking here? You know the region, well, you know the issues.
For the plan change, I think that the polemical debate that we've had here today has been essentially highlighting the concern that there is out there, that if this needs to be smooth as possible. Have I got a cunning plan? Yes, I have. I'm trying to get the water plan in as good a position as possible to make the replacement of the mining privileges as easily understood and administered through the process as possible, so that we don't end up in the Environment Court with each and every application as we go work our way through, so that it works for all parties.
Councillor Deacon then.
Keeping the costs of the
question is going to be almost exactly the same as Councillor Kempton. What are the implications of stopping this thing stone dead?
Mm.
In response to your response, Mr. McRae, Plan Change 1D is going to finish up on the swamp of the Environment Court.
Yeah.
Well, it may, but it will resolve most of the issues for most of the minimum flow consents in the future.
We're getting advice that it's the right thing to do, okay, if it's the right thing to do, and we are satisfied with that, and we agree, then we need to be thinking as a council of the wider ramifications of going down this path, timing wise.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's important. I'm not saying it's wrong. Yeah. Council Scott.
Yeah, just quickly. I actually, firstly, would like to thank Mr. McRae for speaking on behalf of the tributaries. Because they're a key part. I like the fact that we're trying to get a transparent and a consistent approach. Where I sense the concern is regarding the clarity of the information we're providing and the timeliness. And personally, if you can take that on board.
Yep, absolutely.
But my sense is I'd rather take the tributaries on once in the Environment Court than 100 of them over time and regret in 10 years' time that we didn't dig deep. But there's a resource, there's a timeliness, there's a clarity. Like in this report, it's not clear to me, you know, you're saying there's some science work, whereas it would have been nice to have an attachment saying, well, this is basically the tempo. If I'm a farmer having a consent, this is basically how it's going to work and the information. I also take Councillor Robinson's perspective that, you know, do we really want to reopen cans of worms that we don't need to open? So ideally, we just open what we need to open. From an efficiency perspective and from a risk perspective.
Yeah. Look, I just need to clarify that this is not the presentation material that we would be going to the public with. This is for discussion here today.
Maybe that could have been the attachment, though, and that might have addressed the issues right
now. Yep.
Yeah.
Councillor Waddy, did you have your hand up before? Or you? No? Okay, that's good. Well, we're coming. Oh, Councillor Hope.
I just wonder. I would be happy. You've talked a lot today and you've explained and clarified what it is you're trying to achieve, though it is still tricky and there's still bits that I'm not sure. Would it be possible perhaps we had an in-house workshop, we actually put up on the board, we have a look what you're talking about, you draw us a diagram, We see what the flows are, how it comes and why you're affected. Where does that 1D handle? And if you're coming down this path and you're all on with a whole lot of others, how you are affected or how you're not. Because I'll be honest, I'm still not quite sure of it, and I would not like to convey the wrong information if I'm approached by a farmer again. I think it's really important that we get that wee bit right.
I'd have to also say that, Madam Chair, because my original words that I wrote underneath my recommendation was, I can't support this report being received. We need to workshop 1D first.
Okay, so we found as though we had a number of requests. One of them is for combining some consultation with the upcoming Dean Permit Forum. Remind me of the timing for that, end of March.
Yes.
Yeah, end of March. Okay. We've had some discussion around a workshop, and I guess it would be before then. We've got drop-in sessions, though, currently planned for end of February.
Yes.
Right. So we need to make a decision on that as well. If we were to go down workshopping it, we may have to come in on a council perhaps. But it wouldn't, we've got a lot on. We've got a recommendation that the report is received at the moment. Nobody's put anything different. Fraser's nodding that a workshop would be okay. Are we asking for that?
Madam Chair, I'm happy to move an additional motion that essentially asked staff
for the discussion
on workshops as soon as practical.
So they're not public.
It means that we need to adjourn on an additional day, I think we need to consider the direction.
That's right.
I'll second that. I'll second that, Madam Chair.
Anybody want to speak to that?
I just agree with Councillor Hyde. I haven't fully got my head around it, and if I continue to receive, I have one call about a particular item, but I continue to receive phone calls. I want to be able to be more informed so I can give the correct advice, because it is such an important issue out there to a number of the farming community.
So what I need to understand then is, what will our staff be doing from now on?
That's exactly the question I was going to ask.
Carrying on.
Sorry, you can ask it.
Because there's a bit here that says, Madam Chair, as notified elsewhere, the schedule for public consultation has been notified to all holders of consent to take water of other interested parties, which means the consultation process is already underway. Now, I'm not opposed to a workshop, but all I'm saying is that workshop may decide to change a number of things, including the messages that are relayed and the detail of that message and even of the proposals. Is the plan, therefore, going to be that we suspend the consultation process until the workshop? That was the question I was going to ask.
Yes, I guess where I was getting at too, because we have already notified people of end of February. But we've got a motion, and it's been moved and seconded. If you wanted to speak further to it.
Not particularly, I want to ask a question. So, to trigger this process, I assume there was a notification in public notification?
For this, yes. And a letter to all of the deemed permit holders.
Yeah. So then, was there a council resolution to notify?
There was a workshop where we laid out the plan changes for getting through to 2021, getting the plan ready for 2021, replacing the consents, where we had the catchments, where we had minimum flows, and this plan change was at the end of that regime, and that was at that workshop. It was agreed from the floor that this plan change here should be brought forward.
So
the staff
was a workshop, so we haven't actually formed. You can't decide anything in a workshop. So
I was just going to suggest previous local authority along the road, there's always a council resolution.
And that's what you need.
So we don't have a formal decision on this. Yep.
We haven't done that in the past.
No, we haven't done that. That's not our policy. It may be elsewhere, but
it hasn't been.
Through the chair, I wonder if But the process is, of course, clearly spelled out under legislation of what needs to happen to trigger either a plan change or a plan, a fully notified plan.
It's in the annual plan.
Yeah. Well, council was here.
So we're actually just starting the first stage of consultation, gathering up some issues, and the formal notification will come later.
Notification of change.
Notification was for, it was May, June, I think, was the time frame.
Through the chair, can I just clarify through the chair? So this is this preliminary consultation before a notified plan change?
Yes. This is consultation
to determine what the plan change might look like.
Council Scott.
I mean, so my question is through the chair, Mr. McCray, is that like if we squeeze in a workshop, which may have some a bit of feedback that may tweak what's being actually said at the drop-in session. How does that impact on your timing? Is it going to work? Can you see it working?
It's possible. It will just divert some staff time to organise the workshop.
Do you know what's being said at these drop-in sessions now?
No, because we haven't had them yet.
I know you haven't had them, but I'm saying, how you're going to plan and what's going to the message you're going to say.
Yes. Yes.
You do?
Yes.
So why can't we have the workshop this afternoon?
And I don't want to be facetious about this, but we will essentially repeat the discussion that we've had for the last half hour or so. What the issues are that we've seen there, the uncertainty by the words that are already in the plan, and the attempt to try and clarify that wording going forward for those people who will be using those parts of the water plan for their particular application, their replacement to take water.
I'm about to put a motion, see how we go on a workshop beforehand, but yeah.
Madam Chair, for clarification, the community consultation starts on February the 20th, our next council meeting is the 22nd or 21st, the Wednesday, so it's that whole week. I think the workshop after that, hearing feedback from the staff about what happened
with the community,
to clarify what the next move is. And as we move towards and lock in or do not, the process as we move towards notification of the plan change. So we've publicly advertised and we've written to all the people, and there's been plenty of discussion today, plenty of discussion occurring in the community by the sound of our phones ringing, and let's have a workshop and then reassess following that first round of consultation, let's call it.
It would be really useful, Stephen, for the workshop that we actually saw the material that was being consulted on. I mean, it seems slightly absurd, with all due respect, that you're going to have a workshop after you've already had your public consultation or put your material out there. And I think we need to see the material, which is what Andrew's talking about, so that we understand exactly what is being communicated to our constituents. I don't hate to be in an embarrassing position of saying to a constituent of mine, listen, I'm sorry I can't ask you any questions because we haven't had a workshop on that yet. Yes, I know you've been consulted on that and I know you've been to the meeting.
We have got documentation of what is going out, what has gone out. That's in our pack.
Right, we're getting into a conversation who's going to answer this? Mr. McCray?
With respect to that idea, there's a point where staff have to be enabled to be able to go and get on with the business of the council within the constraints of the governance that are created going forward.
If the message is going to change at the workshop, if there are some tweaks done as a result of councils and things like that, then some of the information that you'll provide won't necessarily be 100% accurate or may be amended.
So what I'm hearing is you want to examine all the material that we do before we go out to do any plan change workshops.
Oh gosh, I'd like to see it. Absolutely.
Madam Chair, we already have. It's on the website. It's perfectly clear that has gone out to everybody.
Yep, I have got that.
Which states what it's all about.
Where did that go?
And I think we've all identified today exactly, yeah, and Mr. Right. McRae said it's going to identify a lot of questions and people who aren't clear about what they're doing going forward, and those questions will be just as valid.
Absolutely.
I guess that's where Councillor Woodhead came from. Let's hear them. Let's see how confused or clear people are in the community about what their pathway forward is, and that will help to inform us where we go from there. Councillor Noon, you've got your motion there. I can't actually remember what it said specifically, so shall we read that out again? And practicable, I think it's going to be after the notified consultation by the sounds of it. So let's put the motion then. Oh, sorry, we've already got it, haven't we? We've already got a mover and a seconder, so yeah, I can put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you very much for the robust discussion there and allowance for a bit of extra time. We have got a director's report. Sorry, I need to put the final recommendation about the report. Yes, very important. Other recommendation that the report is received also needs to have a mover and a seconder. Mover, Councillor Scott, seconded Councillor Deaker. All in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Director's report, we're well past lunch time. I think it's probably better that we just cover it off though, if we can. Let's try to take most of this as read. There are some important aspects there and covers off mainly summaries of stuff that we have heard before and progress on those. So if anybody's got anything specifically to speak on the director's report, actually, an important point to note, we were perhaps going to come back after lunch, weren't we? So, sorry, I forgot that, Mr. McRae. There is, in the recommendations, two reports are received, which we haven't got.
Yeah, we'll circulate the copies of these were made available to councillors.
So, we discussed just before, actually, perhaps it would have been better to come back after lunch and actually have the reports.
Sorry, Madam Chair, it's on here as a copy of these reports.
Report on waterways research and coastal values assessments are received.
Madam Chair, we could adjourn and move into the bus.
We'll adjourn this meeting for now and come back. We can't we can't address reports we haven't actually seen. Thank you.
For the members of the public and for councillors, we're going to start the finance and court meeting. There are members of the public interested in the petition discussion.